Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
A bit of seasonal music there for you to conclude this tremendous performance by England to win the series 3-0. The three kings of Orient. Well, who are they? Ben Stokes, definitely, for his leadership and general initiation and drive. Harry Brook for being man of the series. And actually, Brendan McCullum for his general demeanour, his energy, the innovation that he's brought into this England side. And I guess you could also say Rob Key is one as well, because he has been the guy who's brought in McCullum and Stokes as coach and captain and really initiated England's new purpose and rejuvenation. What do you say, Simon?
So that's four kings, Yoz, is it? Are we going for three kings or four kings?
Well, it is, I suppose, yeah. I guess you alternate between Rob Key and Harry Brook.
Yeah. Well, bottom line, fantastic series win for England. You think a year ago they were losing in Adelaide in the Ashes, and Joss Butler that day tried to bat out for a draw all day, and he was out, eventually hit wicket. It's actually a great rear guard action, but there aren't many rear guard actions anymore from this England team after a stunning transformation. Go back to that comment from Ashley Giles: you can change the coach, you can change the captain, you can change me, and nothing will change because the system won't allow it to change. Well, that is not proved to be the case, is it? And England have changed dramatically this year. It's great fun to watch, and long may it continue. I mean, just because it's just enjoyable to watch, really. It's just great fun, and you don't quite know what you're going to see next. We had Rehan Ahmed going out at number three, for example, on the third evening. It's that sort of thing. Rehan Ahmed making his debut, for goodness sake, full stop. Harry Brook in that side, and what a series he has had. 468 runs at 93, and a strike rate of 93 as well. But don't just dwell on Harry Brook. Ben Duckett, strike rate of 95 in the series, 356 runs at 71, and he hit the winning runs today. Nice red inker to take onto the plane with you at home for Christmas.
Yes, absolutely. A measure of what England have achieved, by the way, a 3-0 victory in Pakistan, the first ever team to win three test matches in a series in Pakistan, other than Pakistan themselves, of course, visiting team, I mean. Also, 9 out of 10 wins for Stokes since he took over as captain, so a 90% win ratio, which is the best of any captain who's captained 10 tests or more. So that's an amazing performance, especially after England's dismal efforts beforehand, before he took over. And actually, also, one other interesting point. This test victory in Karachi is the first time that England have won a test match without either Jimmy Anderson or Stuart Broad in the side since Rehan Ahmed was 4 months old. So 18 years since England won an overseas test match without either Anderson or Broad in the side. So that's just a measure of what England have achieved. And I mean, in the way they've achieved it too. You mentioned the strike rates there. You know, the strike rates of people like Ollie Pope as well. I think the average strike rate for England was about a run a ball, wasn't it? Five or six and over is what they've been going at generally. One shouldn't forget people like Ollie Pope being very consistent. He scored 238 runs at 47, strike rate of 94. Who else has done well? Zach Crawley, strike rate of 91. Mark Wood, a strike rate of 90. Ben Stokes, of course, strike rate of 93. So, you know, England's clear intent was to speed up the scoring rate, especially in Pakistan. And it all started, really, didn't it? From that first test match, from that first test innings, from that first test morning, when Zach Crawley took 14 off the first over, Ben Duckett a boundary with his first ball when he received the bowling. It's been basically a juggernaut from there on.
What we're going to do in this podcast is look at how England won in Pakistan or why they won in Pakistan. And we might just dwell towards the end on that victory in Rawalpindi. We might just look at games that change cricket. And we don't know yet whether that Rawalpindi match will change cricket, i.e., you know, you really just go for it and see where that takes you, as England did on that memorable day right at the start of the series. So how did England win in Pakistan? I think four reasons, Yoz. Let's deal with the first one. Ben Stokes' leadership of this team. I mean, you mentioned at the start his left field thinking, really, his ability to innovate, to think out of the box, to try different things, and that's been such a feature of the series. Okay, you can play in an aggressive way, but you've also got to be able to find a way to take 20 wickets in each test match, and England have done that. They've taken 60 wickets in the series to Pakistan's 49 wickets, and a lot of that has been to do with the ability to or the willingness to experiment and somehow conjure wickets. Here's a fascinating thing, that England's two five wicket takers in this series are who? They are Will Jacks and Rehan Ahmed. I mean, you would not have put a great deal of money on that at the start of the series, would you?
No, not at all. In a way, I suppose it's the seamers who earned the wickets by being so accurate and so penetrative as well, in a different way to how they approached playing or bowling in England. It's interesting, isn't it, how England have reversed the old cliche. The new ball bowlers have been old ball bowlers and the old ball bowlers have been new ball bowlers, because they've opened the bowling with spinners. So Jack Leach has opened the bowling in four out of six innings in the three test matches. And the seamers have been waiting. I think Jimmy Anderson in one test was third change or something. So they've come on when the ball is better suited to what they're trying to do. And the other thing is, England have totally, talking about the way they've set fields and things, talking about innovation, they've forgotten about slip fielders, except sometimes a leg slip, and tried to get wickets with the seamers, with men in drive positions, short extra cover, short mid-wicket, a sort of shortish square leg, some innovative fielding positions which have created wicket-taking opportunities, both for seamers and spinners. It's dried up the runs against the seamers, and then the spinners have come in and exploited the batsman's, you know, lack of momentum, and they've got out to the spinners.
Yeah, I think the thing that will stick in my mind as well is England's willingness to use the short ball. We saw it last summer at times, but they've used the short ball here most memorably in the second innings at Rawalpindi, when they declared, you know, there were some who thought, you know, that's quite a tight declaration. Pakistan could knock these runs off tomorrow, and you can end up scoring 600 plus and 500 in a day and end up losing the test match. Now, that didn't happen. England got wickets on that fourth evening through just, you know, a very very old tactic, actually, that was used way back when, bodyline series, whatever, just banging the ball in short with the field set back, and Pakistan succumbed. They lost a couple of wickets. So it's that ability to think and to consider what is necessary and what might work, rather than being conventional. And I think that has been one of the features. So I think point number one, England's victory here, Ben Stokes' leadership, which seems to go from strength to strength. It's weird, isn't it? It's one of those things where you just look at it, and that cliche, isn't it? Everything he touches turns to gold. It's been a bit like that this year. Yesterday, when Rayhaan Ahmed on, he was saying today to me that the reason he didn't bring him on is because the ball was reversing, and we thought that was the best way to go. When it wasn't bearing any fruit, or it stopped happening, right, we'll turn to Rayhaan Ahmed, and then bang, Babar Azam hits a long hop to mid wicket. Everything has worked. Okay, so that's Stokes's leadership.
Yeah, and I'm just to add to that, I mentioned the three or four kings at the start, and one of the people who might have instigated the whole approach to the out cricket that England have showed would be Rob Key, because of course Rob Key was in the commentary team during the Pakistan-Australia series. What, 6 or 7 months ago? No, March of this year, I think it wasn't. It sort of 7, 8 months ago, and he saw at close hand how Australia managed to win that series in the end by sticking with various ploys and sort of finally capitalising on an opportunity in the final Test match. Key, an astute student of the game, who was then in the media, soon became England's director of cricket, and I'm sure a lot of what he absorbed during that series, Pakistan-Australia, he would have passed on to Stokes and the team.
Okay, let's move on to perhaps our second point. And I think team effort and that sort of the team buy-in, they haven't won here because of one or two outstanding performances. They've won here through a team effort and everybody contributing and buying in as well. I think, you know, when you come to somewhere like Pakistan, security has been tight. They've not been able to go out. You do get to know people much better. Perhaps you do build a greater team spirit. Sometimes you can get really fed up with someone, you know, if you see them every day and you can't get away and you can't go out and do your own things. But it has been a team effort where everyone has contributed. Even someone like Ben Folkes, who had to wait for his chance, comes in, keeps really well and makes vital runs, absolutely vital runs in England's recovery in that first innings in the Test match that's just finished. His 60 helped England get that 50-run lead, which built the pressure on Pakistan. So, you know, sort of an unsung hero, really. But just about everyone contributing, even Joe Root, who didn't get stacks of runs, taking vital wickets, taking very useful wickets. But, you know, the likes of Duckett and Crawley and Brooke and Pope have all made hundreds. Jack Leach, the leading wicket taker, Anderson, Robinson and Wood, vital to England's strategy, taking vital wickets at times. Jacks, Rayhaan Ahmed. You know, it's hard to look down. It's not easy to look down that team and say, well, he didn't really contribute very much. It was one of those sort of archetypal team efforts.
Yeah, and if you look at the series averages for England, seven batsmen averaging over 30, which includes Mark Wood, by the way, averaging 38. He contributed well down the order. So seven batsmen averaging over 30. One of those wasn't Joe Root, who only averaged 25. And seven bowlers with five wickets or more. Only one of the eight bowlers used didn't take at least five wickets. And that one person was Ben Stokes himself, actually. One for 124. But everyone else taking at least five wickets of the seven bowlers used. As you say, Jack Leach with 15. Had the highest average, 44, but obviously also bowled the most overs, 177 overs. And just excellent contributions. Anderson, 8 wickets. Mark Wood, 8. Both of them averaging around the 20 mark, which is very good for these conditions. 9 wickets for Robinson at an average of 21. So, you know, England have done so well to find ways of taking wickets in innovative ways and had the time to do it because the batsmen scored at such a rate to give them that time, that they were also prepared to do those short spells as well. And bowlers, you know, they're grumpy people and they don't like the ball being taken off them after three overs when they've just found a rhythm. And you can get kind of difficult characters who will object to that sort of thing. But these guys have all bought into the overall team policy. It's called total cricket, isn't it? And it's worked brilliantly.
Yeah, 4 of the 6 leading wicket takers were from England and 4 of the top 6 leading run scorers were from England as well. So a team effort from this England side to come here and win in Pakistan. Third feature, I think, third reason, Pakistan's woes. I think, you know, that is has been a factor. I think some poor selection, e.g. four number 11s in the first test match. You know, a lack of batting depth. Okay, you could say, well, on a flat pitch, you expect the top order to do it. But actually, it sort of was their undoing in the end. It was one way of England sort of getting through them. Some injuries as well. And let's face it, Chaanshaay Afridi not here. That might have made a difference. And the first two test matches were quite tight. England made all the running in the first test match, but they only just won it with about 10 minutes to spare because of the light. And they were, you know, very narrow winners in that second test match as well. Nassim Shah was injured. Harris Rauf got injured in that first test match, so he couldn't bowl his overs. So there were things that went England's way. You know, Azhar Ali, for example, coming towards the end of his career, he didn't play in the second test match. Imam didn't play in this one because he was injured. So Pakistan have had some problems as well in their lineup, which I think has helped England. England sort of got amongst them, and they haven't been able to get it right, perhaps in terms of their selection and fitness. And of course, you know, someone like Abrar, he is the leading wicket taker in the series, didn't play in the first test, which seems strange at the time.
Exactly.
May have been a good thing for them in a way, because you know, he may have gone around the park and his confidence dashed. But also, you know, you feel that he should have played. You know, on merit, he should have played in that first test match.
I think Pakistan's spinners generally, apart from Abrar, were very disappointing. It's a type of bowling you expect them to be good at. You think of when England have played Pakistan in the past. I mean, somebody like Syed Ajmal, who played for Pakistan for so long, and no one could fathom him. I remember actually standing behind him trying to figure out how he bowled his doosra when he was warming up one day, and the coach. That worked with him every day sometimes missed it and lost the plot. Well, they just haven't had an extra ingredient in spin. Abrar Ahmed, excellent, but where is his support? There was nothing really. They were all quite orthodox spinners who pose very little threat to batsmen now reared on a diet of spin in T20, absolutely fearless at playing sweeps and reverse sweeps, and Pakistan clueless about how to stem the flow without a leg spinner or somebody with a bit more mystery, apart from Abrar, who was obviously a discovery for them. But you're right. I mean, they just lacked any kind of potency. And I don't think Babar Azam managed the attack that well. He just left bowlers on. He didn't change it round like England did. I thought his field settings were... There were times when, for instance, he just put people right back on the boundary. Well, actually, right back on the boundary on quite big fields is a sort of bit of a nondescript position. You notice where England took catches were often with fielders 20 yards in from the boundary where a top edge would land, whereas the Pakistan boundary fielders were right back on the boundary and the occasional top edge flew and landed safely. So I think the management of their bowling resources as well wasn't great.
Yeah, Zahid Mahmood, you talk about Pakistan's spin options. Zahid Mahmood took 12 wickets. He's the third leading wicket taker in the series, but he went at nearly 7 runs and over. England just relished him. They just tucked into him. And yeah, and that, I think, underlines the point in a way, totally, that you've made about just Pakistan didn't have that control in the spin department. So they've got some problems to sort out. They've got a series coming up against New Zealand. Starts on Boxing Day here in Karachi, and then they've got another one against New Zealand in Multan. So Stokes' leadership, team effort, Pakistan's woes, and then I think England's mentality, really. I think that is, you know, it's so crucial, the way they played out here, that really positive mindset that's just, well, I say seeped into their consciousness. It's more than that, hasn't it, really? It's totally galvanised them this year. And we said at the start, can they play the same way in Pakistan on pitches out here? And yeah, absolutely. Positive cricket, positive batting, positive bowling, field placing. Yeah, so England's mentality really strong here. And also, you know, perhaps in the past, the England team's coming to Pakistan, a bit nervous about coming, you know, a bit suspicious about coming, but actually, you know, totally embracing it, embracing the challenge, and, you know, not being here for 17 years. Yeah, go for it. It's good to be here. You know, it's that sort of attitude as well. So a real open-minded mentality about being in Pakistan and making it work. So England taking 38 minutes to knock off the runs required today. Never in doubt. I mean, I've seen some big England collapses over the years. I think it was a 9 for 27 once in a T20 match in Bangalore. I've seen them, you know, lose all 10 wickets in a session, all sorts of things. But there's absolutely no doubt they were going to win today. The 55 required. I suppose the only minor surprise, actually, is it took them 11 overs. I thought 35 minutes. Actually took them 38 minutes to win the game. Ben Stokes was trying to hit the six that would have taken him past Brendan McCullum's six-hitting record in international. He was trying it. In fact, he very nearly won the game doing it, but he didn't quite manage to knock it over the rope. And Brendan McCullum afterwards saying, you know, he almost needs to break the record because it's on his mind. He said he's just plinking them at the moment. And that's, you know, I put that to Ben Stokes and he said, yeah, I am. He sort of knows it's
well,
there.
Sometimes he tries to hit the ball too hard, doesn't he? And actually, there's a nice video on the England cricket Instagram feed of Stokes and McCullum having a six-hitting contest before this test match.
Yeah.
And McCullum won it. And Stokes sort of throws his bat away in disgust, a bit like yesterday when he had a big slog and the bat flew out of his hand and went further than the ball. So I think at times he just tries to hit the ball too hard, but obviously that record will come pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean that bat flinging thing was remarkable actually, because it nearly hit one of the kites that had been circling around in this ground. It didn't just go far, it went high as well. I've seen that happen before, where the batter loses control of the bat, but normally it skims and almost takes out the square leg umpire. This one went really high. Astonishing, and the ball it went into his pad and just rolled away into the onside, sort of maximum effort. And then that actually, I think, summed it up. It was a very funny moment. All sorts of bizarre things have happened in this series, not least yours. And let's go back to one of the points we were making at the start. We were talking about games that change cricket, and so not least that first test match in Rawalpindi. Amazing first day. 506 for four, not in a day, in 75 overs. Okay, that was all that the light allowed in Rawalpindi. You know, perhaps it will, when we look back, perhaps that might be a match that changed Test cricket. How are other teams going to play? Are they going to look at England and try to copy them? I spoke to Azhar Ali afterwards today and he said, you have to have the players to be able to do it. You can't just say, we're going to play like this. You have to pick players who are able to do this. So to be decided, TBD on Rawalpindi, whether it does, you know, when we look back, whether it is a match that changed cricket.
Well, I suppose, I mean, just to comment on that particular strategy, I suppose it was cultivated by two things, really. One, that England had the horses for courses selections, like Ben Duckett, a very aggressive player against spin, like Harry Brook, who is a multi-format player with burgeoning confidence, who had played a lot in the T20 competition in Pakistan and knew about the conditions, like Ben Stokes, who of course is a naturally very aggressive cricketer. So they had very fluent attacking batsmen who were ideally suited to being positive, but they needed them to be because they had a bowling attack that would take time to take wickets. They didn't really have, apart from Mark Wood available after the first test, they didn't really have an extra set, someone who's going to blow away wickets. They had bowlers who were going to chip away, who took time, you know, Anderson, Robinson, Leach, etc. They didn't have their archer, for instance, someone who's going to blow people out of the water, or, you know, a wrist spinner, something like that, that is going to take wickets in flurries. They needed time to take wickets. So that's why I think they came up with this plan to score as quickly as possible. So it worked very well, but you need the players, as Azhar Ali says, you need the players and the strategy concept, the need for the strategy to make it work.
Yeah, and you probably need a really flat pitch as well, which is what was dished up for England. What I think is going to be interesting is what groundsmen do, curators or whatever do when England go away now, what sort of pitches they're going to give them. Because if they give them flat pitches, then their attacking style, in a way, it sort of plays into their attacking style. Anyway, that's the future. Two test matches in New Zealand, one against Ireland, and then into the Ashes, which I mean, we almost can't wait for that. I think there's a feeling in Australia again, you know, yeah, wait until you come up against our, you know, our top pace bowlers. And yeah, they might take England down. Absolutely, they might. They're a very good side, Australia, and they're showing that at the moment. They're top of the World Test Championship. They've just beaten South Africa in 2 days. They've crushed the West Indies. Yeah, they look a good side. There's no doubt about it, and they've got two top class players.
I mean, it's going to be a hell of a talk. It's going to be a hell of an Ashes series, isn't it? And you know, the thing about being aggressive with the bat is that it does reduce a bowler's optimism and potency, and it just knocks you sideways as a bowler when batsmen are coming at you one after the other. It's a cavalry charge, and you become a bit kind of almost reluctant, and you lose heart and you lose faith. And you could see Pakistan in the field just looking dispirited as the series wore on, because the stuffing had been knocked out of them, and that can happen to any bowler. Pat Cummins perhaps not, but most bowlers will be, to a certain extent, intimidated by this sort of approach. And it takes a strong man to stand up to it.
Yeah, and England have done well against some good bowlers, haven't they, this year? So we'll see. Anyway, that's for the future. Matches that change cricket, slightly changing tack. Matches that change cricket. I mean, I picked out four over the years, nearly a century, actually. My first one, I go back to the Bodyline series, 1933, Adelaide. Mounted police needed to prevent a riot. It was sort of like it was a low point in Bodyline, and that led to a law change. But it was sort of, I suppose, way back when, it was a precursor to fast bowl. You know, the preeminence of fast bowlers that we saw perhaps in the 80s, 90s, when the quick bowlers were right on top of the batters. West Indies had all those fast bowlers. Was it a game that changed cricket? It did, in a way. It changed the laws of the game. And it, at the time, altered a few careers. And it had a huge resonance in the relationship between England and Australia as well. Whether it was a game that changed cricket in the way that perhaps other matches have changed it later, I'm not sure. But I think there was an element of sort of line in the sand then, back in 1932-3. I'd love to have gone back and watched that series. You know how we can go back now and watch the 1980s, 1970s, because there is the footage there, the consistent footage. Fantastic to go back and watch that series in colour and in HD, wouldn't it? So that's the Bodyline series, and in particular the 1933 Adelaide match. Only one team is playing cricket out there, and it was Australia, supposedly, and not England. Then fast forward another game in Australia, World Series, November 1978, when the first day-night match on a traditional cricket ground was played at the SCG between a World Series team of Australia and West Indies. And that was the first time that Packer thought that this was going to work, because 44,000 turned up to watch, and it was the first successful match really in World Series cricket. And I think so much that's happened in the last whatever it is 40 odd years has sort of stemmed from that, in a way. You know, you think of white ball cricket, day-night cricket, coloured clothing, sort of more flamboyant cricket really. I know one day cricket started by then, first one day international in the early 70s, but that game was a change, and also for TV, the way TV rights were sold as well, and that has had a knock-on effect over the years. That's led to satellite television, explosion of satellite television, for example, rather than just free-to-air local TV.
I think it made cricket a spectacle because of the colours, which were quite vibrant, because of the floodlights. When you look at coloured clothing under floodlights with the big green arena, the outfield, and the white ball as well, it is quite a stunning looking spectacle. And it borrowed a bit from football, that, didn't it, where football had floodlights for years before. And I actually remember playing a white ball tournament in South Africa in the early 80s, well before we had floodlights in England. I played in a South African domestic tournament, and playing with a white ball in coloured clothing was really exciting. And, it was playing cricket at a time when people could watch as well. They could come at night and they'd been at work during the day. They could come at night and enjoy 3 or 4 hours of cricket. And that really did put cricket on a different level to what it had been before. And it just had a buzz about it. White ball, coloured clothing at night was incredibly exciting and really gave cricket a lift.
Yeah, so there's our second match. And then our third and fourth match, and then there'll be others as well. And feel free to chip in with your examples of games that you think have changed cricket. The other two which really spring to mind for me, India win the World Cup in 1983. Sea change for Indian cricket, and you see how that's developed. And then another Indian World Cup victory, and that was the T20 World Cup victory against Pakistan in 2007. So those are my sort of four games that have changed cricket over the years. 2007 World Cup, not long before the IPL started, India beating Pakistan in the final.
You're right that the 2007 T20 success of India really was the catalyst for the IPL. I've got a picture actually on my laptop of the welcome back to the Indian team having won that tournament in South Africa. And it took them 11 hours to get from Mumbai Airport back into the town, or back to the BCCI headquarters in Colaba, down in the south of Mumbai. The street were lined with millions of fans welcoming MS Dhoni's team home. MS Dhoni had been picked as a sort of 21-year-old wonderkind captain, and they'd won the tournament. And that really expedited the development of the IPL, the launch of the IPL, which was the next year, 2008. And I was at that first game. And who set the fireworks alight in that first game? Brendan McCullum, who opened the batting for the Kolkata Knight Riders. He smashed 158, not out, with 13 sixes. And it just lit up the night in Bangalore. And really, from then on, the IPL was launched and took the world by storm. So, interestingly, it was Brendan McCullum, now the coach of England, who really set that alight.
Yeah, so there's another game. Yeah, that first IPL match. But you could also argue as well, Yoz, the first T20 match in the T20 Cup. We had a look at it earlier, 13th of June 2003. There were five group games. And that started it all off, didn't it? That started the type of cricket that we're seeing now and the type of cricket that we're seeing in the future, we will see in the future. And in a way, this England team's, the way they're playing is a sort of response to that, isn't it? It's trying to drag Test cricket back to relevancy. And so good luck with that, because the tide is a very strong one going in that short form T20 direction. But so 2003 as well. So there's some games there that did change cricket. You were there, weren't you, that night as well? You were there in to see Brendan McCullum, and you were at the game in 2003, weren't you? One of the five games that were played in 2003.
It was Middlesex against Surrey, and it was sensational actually, because it was a big crowd. You know, Lords hadn't really seen such a big crowd for a match, a domestic game like that, except a domestic final before. So that was exciting. And also, Surrey played their second 11, pretty much, because they didn't really see the future in the same way as perhaps other counties did. So they played players that almost weren't normally in their team for a longer format type game. So, you know, it took a bit of time, in a way, for every county to catch on with the T20 idea. And of course, by then, India had captured it and taken it away, run off with the ball, if you like, by doing the IPL in 2008. I mean, one other thing, just to give England a bit of credit, 1969, the first year of the John Player League, I think was also important. And that was something instigated by Ted Dexter, who died earlier this year, the former England captain and entrepreneur, who had really cultivated the idea of one-day cricket through the mid-60s, was captain of Sussex that won the Gillette Cup for the first 2 years, and was quite innovative himself by encouraging fast bowlers to pitch it up full with straight fielders towards the boundary, long on and long off, towards the end of an innings, to, you know, kind of like the death bowling idea. He was the first person to sort of introduce that. And then he kind of got the momentum going for the introduction of the John Player League in the late 60s, which really transformed cricket. It lured a lot of tremendous players from overseas to come and play in England in the 70s. And I think, again, kind of really invigorated English cricket and sort of put one-day cricket on the map, which other countries then took on board themselves. So I think that was a defining moment, the sort of late 60s, with the introduction of the 40-over competition, which of course now has been concertinaed into the 20-over competition.
That's right. And just a brief note on that 83 Indian World Cup victory, for those who don't remember it. Basically, it was played in whites. It was played at Lords. India beat a great West Indies side. But the point is that next time the World Cup was held, it was in India. And that sort of really sort of kick-started the Indian cricket economy, basically. And it has not looked back from there. So those are our matches that change cricket. And in a way, as I mentioned just now, Rawalpindi might, you know, sort of, it was the sort of apex of the fight back, if you like, of Test cricket. And it's up to, I suppose, other teams to see how they are, you know, going to play the game, whether they do play it in that sort of much more dashing, extravagant way. I mean, the other point to say is that Test cricket doesn't have to be all about big shots. It, you know, it, in a way, some of its beauty is its variation, isn't it? I mean, Shad Shaqeel in this series, excellent for Pakistan, but his strike rate was 45. He made 346 runs, and he was, you know, a really nuggety player. So, that, you know, the thing about Test cricket, there is room for that type of player. It allows all sorts in a way. But perhaps it does need, you know, it has needed a bit of rejuvenation to grab people's attention. So yeah, it's worth playing. Look at it; it's exciting, and well, it might be, I don't know, it might be a fart in the wind, Rawalpindi, when we look back in the future. But it also might be a very significant game. Let's hope it is a significant game actually, and it does sort of revitalise people's interest in Test cricket. But there, you know, we are slightly swimming against the tide.
Yeah, so anyway, if we'd love to hear from you, the listeners, if you have a view on defining moments in cricket, matches that changed the game. Post those on the Analyst Pod Twitter feed, which is at the Analyst Pod. We'd love to hear what you think were matches that changed the game. Now, Simon, you've been in Pakistan for 3 weeks. You're coming home to Christmas. I wouldn't have thought it feels very Christmassy in Pakistan at the moment. But how has it been for you? Just give us a quick overview of how Pakistan have received this England team and the series, and you know what the atmosphere has been like generally.
Yeah, I think it's been one of the best tours I've been on. Actually, I think all of us came here with a bit of apprehension. There's a lot of talk about the security. What's it going to be like? No one had been to Pakistan. I say England. The Test team hadn't been to Pakistan for 17 years. Some of the players have come for T20s and Pakistan Super League. So, yeah, what's it going to be like? No trouble at all. I mean, England have another tour coming up here in a couple of years' time. I'm sure next time more England supporters will come out and watch the cricket. The cricket's been fantastic as well. I think that's made a difference. I mean, even if England lost the series or drawn it 1-1, I mean, they could have lost the second test. They won this one. The first one could have been a draw. Even if it had been 1-1, whatever, it would have been a fascinating series because the way England played and the way actually Pakistan tried to stay with them. You know, they didn't give up. It was, you know, it looks very one-sided. And generally, the grounds have been great. The crowds in the first two matches were very good, but it's disappointing in Karachi. Yeah, looking forward to coming back again, hopefully, in a few years' time.
Have you had enough tea pal tea?
I've had a few brews. I know it's part of the TV advertising, isn't it? I mean, I love those adverts. I watch them during the T20. I haven't seen them out here because I've been concentrating on the radio commentary. But is it the Sensodyne moment as well? And I mean, it's almost like pantomime advertising, isn't it, really? But perhaps, you know, it's got us talking, hasn't it? So presumably it will stick in people's minds. And that's the whole point of advertising.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. It's certainly been kind of interesting inserts into the coverage generally, which I think when David Gower's been commentating, he's managed to hide a guffaw for some of the time. But anyway, it's been riveting to watch. Those of you who've been able to watch part or all of that series, been fascinating to experience.
And listen to it, Yoz.
And
as
listen
well.
To it, of course. Yeah, listen to it as well. We've enjoyed your dulcet tones. So good luck with your trip back and hope you don't feel too rushed off your feet when you arrive back with about 2 days to go till Christmas Day. It just remains for both of us to say to all of our listeners, thank you for listening to us all year. We'll be doing a review of this tumultuous year in English cricket in the next few days, coming up probably after Christmas. But in the meantime, I hope you can find a turkey if you're a meat eater, because there's not a lot of free-range turkey around because of that bird flu, so that's quite sad. But Simon, you don't eat meat, so what are you having for Christmas Day?
Oh, a delicious nut roast with no chicken next to it.
Very good. Well, I know you've had your issues with vegetarian pizzas with chicken in them during the tour, so hopefully you'll be able to get exactly what you want on Christmas Day, and I hope that is true for all of you listening too as well. So just remains for both of us to wish you a Merry Christmas and see you shortly afterwards.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, goodbye for now.
Social Podcast Network.